we're going to take an engaged home with smart devices and we're going to say, let us optimize your load. When you're not using your electricity, we're going to go ahead using your smart devices, shift your load to greener and cheaper electricity.
Welcome to the Smart Energy International podcast, your guide to innovation and trends in the global power and energy sectors.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Smart Energy International podcast. My name is Areti Daradimu. I am the editor of Smart Energy International, and I'll be your host. I would like to welcome my guest, Ms. Marcia Zafar, Head of Strategy and Policy at Kaluza.
Hi, everybody. My name is Marcia Zafar. I'm Head of Customer Policy and Strategy for Kaluza.
Together, we are going to focus on the human condition in the energy transition and the right and the fight for carbon neutrality, which one could say is a fight for our future. Welcome, Marcia, and thank you for taking the time to have this chat with me.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so for my first question, in recent news that I'm sure you've read, listened to, etc., President Biden just had his climate summit, and he and other world leaders announced a series of action points for their countries, and they committed to them. So the US president, for example, pledged to cut emissions by at least 50% by 2030. But do you think that initiatives and pledges like this can get us to a net zero economy? What do you think realistically will get us there?
I think that is a huge step forward for one of the biggest emitters in the world to come in and say they're going to cut their emissions by between 50 and 52% from the 2005 level. So that's huge. Disappointing that China and India and Russia and the other, you know, these are also really big emitters and they didn't say anything. Essentially, we all breathe the same air. We can't sit there and say, well, Europeans, they're going to breathe this type of air and that's not going to bleed to Africa or it's not going to bleed to Eastern Europe. So if the climate is everybody's climate, just because one country cleans up and the rest are dirty, it's still going to hurt the environment. So I thought President Biden was great. I was a proud American yesterday and a proud citizen of the world. I do hope that other countries follow in those footsteps and pledge, especially China and India.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I actually felt quite good myself as a European because our president also made a pledge and a commitment. So let's hope that the US and Europe together will head the fight against our climate problems. So naturally, the climate action is related to decarbonization. I mean, one cannot but think about decarbonization immediately. But is it really feasible, in your opinion? How and by when, again, also realistically speaking, would we be able to achieve that?
So that's a great question. I think, you know, we're all now kind of sort of aware. I would say most everybody in the world should be aware of climate change. We associate climate change with carbon emissions. There's also methane emissions, which are just as important. And actually, they're even more dangerous than carbon for the first, I think, 10 to 20 years. I think realistically, it's going to be a challenge for us to reduce or eliminate both carbon emissions and methane emissions and still have the lifestyle that we all have and enjoy and work towards. And that's travel, that's eating a lot of meat, that's consuming a lot of energy. For me, from an energy perspective, I think it is very much doable to reduce, to ensure that energy is net zero by 2050. But we have to make sure that the transport industry, the travel industry is on board as well. And it's kind of sort of, it's asking the individual to change their lifestyle. And I'm not sure that without any real impact or effect or negative effect that individuals are going to rise up and say, you know what, I'm not going to eat as much meat anymore, or I'm not going to travel as much anymore. So we have to rely on technology to get us there. And we're in 2021. I'm not so sure that by 2050, we're going to get all of this done. But we have to start, and we are starting. I'm hoping that consumers change their behavior. I'm hoping that cost-effective technology is prevalent to cleaning up all these industries. So I'm hopeful. I'm just not sure that by 2050, we are going to have a net zero economy. I hope we do. I hope I'm wrong. But like I said, you know, there are other industries that still have to play their part, and consumers have to play their part, and we have to change our behavior. And for good or bad, unfortunately, climate change sometimes is associated with a more socially liberal group of people. And then you have either more conservative or more unaware groups that don't care as much. And that's going to be a problem.
You made so many excellent points in this answer that I really don't know where to start. So I'll go with our lifestyles first. You're absolutely right. If we don't change our own lifestyles, how do we expect our governments, the utilities to do the final change? Why do we always have to expect this, I don't know, imaginary white male with the white beard? Some call it God, some call it something else, to suddenly do something magically and change things for us if we don't first change some things in our lifestyles. So I would like to ask you, since like human beings, we always need someone to lead the way, who would you say would be the best to lead the way in this action? Would it be young people like Greta Thunberg, for example? Or would it be activists that would be on the streets? Or is it the average energy consumer that needs to make a difference?
I would say all of the above. And let me expand on that a little bit. You know, most of us are fortunate enough to live in democratically run countries. And in these countries, elections speak volumes. They change the tide of power. So it has to be the voters, whichever country you're in, you have to make your voice heard. And then people like Greta, they need to get on the streets and make sure that this stays on the radar of politicians, because politicians, in my view, will follow the public sentiment. So the public has to be front and center. They have to play their part by voting, by protesting, and by changing their behavior. Energy, specifically, there's a lot of technologies, there's a lot of solutions out there that are going to engage consumers to want to change their electricity demand or want to have them shift their load from 2 o'clock in the afternoon to 2 o'clock in the morning, or to shift their load to a time where energy is greener and cheaper. And the way this can work is if customers have the right smart devices in their homes, if customers enable these technologies to bring them cheaper and greener electricity. So to me, everybody has a role to play, but it starts with voters and it starts with a lot of protests. There should be protests in the streets of China and India and middle of Alabama and Mississippi. Those are the places that we need voices to be heard, voices to be loud, so then their politicians can make those changes.
That's quite an opinion, Marcia. I agree with you. I agree with you up to a point, I think, because I think that sometimes, or at least this is my impression, some activist groups just shout in order to shout without seeing maybe the bigger picture, which would be, yes, let's shout for less carbon in our future, but what about solutions for the jobs that will be lost? How can you say to someone who has made a living out of this, you know what, I'm going to take your livelihood away? And please, I'm playing the devil's advocate here, but I don't want under any circumstance to be associated with groups that forward or support carbon, etc., and fossil fuels. It's just a little bit of an opinion, let's say.
Yeah, but it makes sense, though. It makes sense that, you know, we have to find solutions that are cost effective and solutions that, and also, you know, we need to make sure that jobs are not lost, or if jobs are eliminated, then there's retraining opportunities for people to then get into the green economy. So that's where the government plays a key role, right? Where they have to create the opportunity for replacement rather than displacement.
Exactly. And consumer awareness is also a big part of that. Education is also a big part of that. And speaking of customers or consumers, engaging them in the energy transition and the energy sector in general is becoming more and more a sort of a holy grail for DSOs and other energy-related companies, retailers, etc. What incentive will residential customers have in the future to want to engage and connect their devices? What does engage connectivity stand for, in your opinion?
Okay, so I think my statements have so far been pretty broad, so I'm going to narrow it to a few things. I came to Kaluza I started working here because I looked at the flexibility platform and I said, you know, that is one thing that can engage customers. Because in order for us to completely take advantage of renewable energy, we have to be able to accommodate renewable energy. Renewable energy is intermittent, right? When the sun shines, when the wind blows, when there's hydro, but when the wind is not there or the sun is not there and we don't have a long-term cost-effective solution to storing renewable energy, then we have to look at consumers changing their behavior to basically having them rethink or having us rethink static demand into dynamic demand. And that's what a company like Kaluza is working on. How do we engage customers? And by engage, what I mean is now that government is pushing for subsidies and pushing for smart devices. So instead of having a regular or older washer and dryer, you can have a smart washer and dryer. You can have a small battery in your home. You can have electric heat pump in your home. And then you have your EV. You can turn your home into your green virtual power plant. In that kind of customer action and customer engagement then allows maximum renewable generation. It allows us to not build more infrastructure because now you have your home. You yourself can be generating power. So that's what technologies like Kaluza is going to enable. We're going to take an engaged home with smart devices and we're going to say, let us optimize your load. When you're not using your electricity, we're going to go ahead using your smart devices, shift your load to greener and cheaper electricity. And there's a lot of companies like this. Kaluza is not the only one. There's a whole list of great companies looking for bringing technology solutions to the market to enable customers to easily connect. And the key is it has to be easy, it has to be cheap, and we cannot expect residential customers to become energy experts. So we need technologies that can say, give us your preference, give us your parameters of, for instance, when you want your car charged, by what time, and then you plug it in and we will make sure that we charge that with cheaper and greener electricity. That's the type of technology that I think will be successful in engaging customers. So engaged connectivity to me means the customer has smart devices, the customer has enabled its smart devices to take advantage of greener and cheaper electricity. That's engaged connectivity to me.
Perfect. And that is also related to the smart grid and optimizing the smart grid, which brings me to my next question, which is about the billing platforms, which have been connected recently to flexibility and sustainability of the smart grid. Why is billing platforms, why are they such a big focus suddenly? Why should we care so much as customers, as experts, as anything?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I didn't care about billing platforms just even a few years ago because I didn't really know. I was thinking about let's bring in policy, let's bring in funding and subsidies. But these billing platforms can be powerful tools to engage the customer. So, for instance, a company like Kaluza is building a platform that's easy to use, that's engaging. So when you go pay your bill, there's tools available for you to understand where your energy came from, when did you use the most amount of energy, and then there's tools that can give you helpful hints. Well, if you want to reduce your bill, you can do A, B, C, and D. I think in the past, we have treated customers as captive ratepayers. They just pay their bills and that's it. And the energy industry didn't invest in an engaging interface. But now that residential customers have to be a part of decarbonization, we have to change that mindset. We have to figure out how to make them active participants of the grid. And by that, I mean that billing platform. It shouldn't just be about, hey, you use X amount of electricity, kilowatts, so you owe me X amount of dollars. Rather, it should be more than just about the bill. It should be information. We need to provide the customers with the right information, tailor that information to their own needs, rather than just make it about pay me and that's it. So we at Kaluza, we are actually building an energy retail platform for all energy suppliers, whether in Europe or North America or China or India or globally, that enables the energy supplier to provide the customer with the right information to allow them to engage and become an active participant.
Okay, this sounds very good. And it also sort of breaks up monopolies. I mean, that was the problem also before. In the past years, utilities, energy companies, they were sort of monopolies. Now with new rules and regulations, that has changed. And also a platform, like you said, could be the perfect forum for consumers to engage and learn and participate. But all that, in order to happen, we need to have a clean future. We need to, I don't know, we need to discuss again decarbonization. This is where I want to go again. So for my last couple of questions, I would like, first of all, to ask, if you had a magic wand like Harry Potter and you could only use the magic for a technology to enable decarbonization, what would that technology be and why?
Oh, great question. I would definitely go for green hydrogen. And here's why. If we use renewable energy to make hydrogen, we can then replace natural gas with green hydrogen. And the reason why I think that's important, because I think we need to find ways to make residential customers and bring them the least amount of inconvenience. So if they already have gas boilers, if they already have gas ovens, if they don't have to change it, why should we do that? That's another added effort, right? With green hydrogen, they can still use those boilers and they can still use the oven by using green hydrogen. Green hydrogen today, however, is pretty expensive and transporting it is even more expensive. It would be great if government policymakers and governments globally, they invest in green hydrogen to make it more cost effective, to make it more scalable, because then that's one less thing the customer has to do. That's why if I did have a magic wand, I would bring green hydrogen into play.
I think that you're not the only one. Basically, green hydrogen is a big focus in the European Union also. And for example, the European Build Back Better plan, from a policy perspective, would you say that are we in the right track in Europe? Because I hear from the European Commission coming, there's hydrogen this and hydrogen that, and this is a new initiative and this is another initiative. But compared to the rest of the world, are we on the right track, you would say? Because I remember with renewables, back in the day when solar and wind were, let's say, the trend, and Europe went for it, and America went for it, suddenly China came out and crashed the market, crashed within quotations, of course. So would you say we're on the right track for hydrogen right now?
I think so. And I think what China did was by joining this industry, they brought the cost down. They brought the cost of solar panels down. And I hope China does that as well. I hope China gets involved in green hydrogen. I hope India gets involved in green hydrogen, because then I think that it has a bright future. So to me, Europe is very much progressive when it comes to climate change. I think whereas maybe America is more divided and you have the left believing in climate change and the right is so-so, I think in Europe, most everybody is wanting to act in favor of reducing carbon emissions, in favor of reducing methane emissions. So I think hydrogen, if it can become cost-effective, Europe will certainly play a huge role in that effort.
Let's hope it will. It would be nice. So for my last question, I would like to go back to that magic wand and say that since you don't have it, unfortunately, what suggestion or advice would you give to policymakers, to people like Greta, and to technology providers?
So I think realistically speaking, I mean, change happens when citizens of the world yell and scream and they vote for the people who agree with them. So I think we have to keep that going. And I think there has to be action by average, regular, everyday people. And I would focus on people in China. I would focus on people in India. I would focus on people in middle of America. I hope they get up and get on the streets and start protesting that the air they're breathing is pretty crappy, especially in China and India. And then government has to step in and make sure that the jobs aren't lost, because nobody's going to move the needle forward if we don't have the money to have a comfortable life or to make sure that we have jobs. So government has to create the right opportunities to make sure that there's job training, to make sure that the green economy is actually moving forward. And then the market will move where governments move. To me, it's step one is people have to have a revolution. And then policymakers have to create the right parameters and the right financial incentives and the right financial subsidies and the right jobs to move that forward. Then the market solution comes in, because as much as technology providers and companies are do-gooders, they're do-gooders because they want to make money. And so to me, the technology and the solutions will come once you have the people's revolution, then you have government providing the job security or the new jobs, and then you have market solutions who are going to come up with creative ways to make sure that we move forward.
Excellent. And to be honest, I would like to conclude, to close our discussion with this call to a peaceful revolution, the likes of the Czechoslovakia and how it was divided. And with this final note, Marcia, I would like to thank you very much for being here with me today. Thank you for coming.
Of course, I enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
And thank you all for joining us on this Smart Energy International podcast. For more podcasts, you can visit the Smart Energy International website, smartenergy.com. Be sure to tune in again soon for more conversations and insights into the things that really matter to our industry. Until next time, I'm Areti Daradimu, and you've been listening to the Smart Energy International podcast.